Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith. Greetings to you wherever you may be. Joining me, as always, is my co-host from Anchorage, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? It was not a good weekend to be a giant club in the FA Cup. So that's all I'm going to say. Maybe we'll get to it, maybe we won't, but FA Cup weekend was awesome.
That is right. And joining us today, as you may have seen, we advertised on Twitter, is a former professional soccer player turned comedian turned award-winning XM radio host, Kevin Flynn. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hey, guys, we're going to have to rename the show Three Daft Yanks today. So it's Three Daft Yanks that's talking to you about soccer. Hey, guys, great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
All right, thank you. Let's get a round of applause from everybody.
Nice. That's more production than I've had in my Sirius XM FC show. That's awesome. My God, somebody's helping out. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a small little budget for, you know, some bells and whistles.
Yeah, it's about $1.85.
Well, again, that's more than I had. So good stuff, boys. I love the fact that we have some American voices on the air, and you guys bring a really nice voice to what's out there. This America, this vast tundra, this wasteland that has been soccer. So suddenly we're getting a voice, boys. So you guys are a big part of it.
So, all right. Yeah. So let's talk about you. Of course, you were, or you, I'll still say, are the host of Over the Ball, which was on Sirius XM FC. I don't know. What would you like to say about your show?
Well, I tell you what, I basically, you know, you mentioned it in the opening. I was a professional soccer player. I came up the hard way during that decade long period where there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to play. You know, I came out of college, you know, played on the sports festivals and was on the Olympic team in 84 for a while. And basically, you got out of college, you had nowhere to go. There was the NPSL, which was then became the MISL. They combined. But I played in that league for 3 years. And I'm proud of what I went through there. I really kind of was the education of American soccer player, to quote a famous soccer book. But a lot of bus rides, a lot of playing ball in a lot of small towns, but I eke out a living playing this great game. And, you know, I'm proud to say that, you know, I was at the soccer coaches convention last week, and all the guys I played with are all head coaches, Sasha in Maryland and Mike Noonan in Clemson. Hanging out, having dinner with all those guys, it all started in that NPSL, MISL time. So, you know, I did not go into soccer after I played. I went to graduate school. I coached at Boston University, and I wound up getting into stand-up comedy in Boston and, you know, basically made my living in the last 20 years as a stand-up comic going around the country. I hosted a bunch of national shows, you know, on Discovery Channel, and I was with ESPN for a while and Fox, but really made my money as a comedian. And so I saw this channel start, Sirius XM FC, and I thought, finally, soccer is here. And so I sort of threw my hat in the ring and put my credentials out there and got a show. And I really did the show that I wanted to do, which was basically, you know, first of all, not have an English accent. I wanted to be an American, talking about my American experience through the youth development ranks, through the college ranks, through the professional ranks, and what the can I swear in this?
Oh, yes, podcast? Of course. We encourage
you. Right, yes, please
basically
do.
You encourage it. Listen, you guys, you encourage it. Well, basically, the shit I had to go through as a player, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with the English because, first of all, I'm Irish, but also because, you know, some of my best buddies, you know, going through the sport were English, but boy, some of the biggest assholes were English. And all these guys coming here were opening up camps saying that they were playing in the under-20s, and bullshit, they weren't. And they just have an English accent, and suddenly they had some sort of legitimacy. And I felt like, you know what, this game has grown and grown and grown to the point where finally, you know, we're the big dogs. And when we feed, it's going to be a big thing. So, you know, we're America. We do things very differently. And when we take hold of soccer, it's our game here. And that's part of what the approach I took with Over the Ball when I was on Sirius. I said, look, you know, they had enough English voices on there. They have some great American ones. They have Hartsey, John Hartson, and Tony Meola on there as well, which is awesome. But I felt like, you know what, I'm going to take my soccer background and my entertainment background, talk a little bit of X's and O's, because I can do that, but also to talk about, you know, the entertainment end of where I've been. You know, I've been in movies and stand-up comedy for many years, and so, boy, Jim Gaffigan, Lewis Black, all these guys always talk about soccer. Brian Regan, he knew nothing about soccer, but Brian Regan, you know, he's the biggest touring comedian last year in the country, and he's got a couple of kids that played, so he wanted to talk soccer. So these were the people that you never saw on soccer shows. You never talk about soccer, and yet it's that Euro snob mentality that I think has sort of hurt soccer in America, because people start to talk about it like it's a fine wine or jazz. It's a beautiful game. We love it, but you know, I want to talk about soccer as an American experience. And don't make me feel bad when you're talking about soccer, saying, you know, I mean, I caught some stick because I didn't know who was playing in the Everton midfield in the 1970s. I'm like, I do not give a shit who played in the Everton midfield in the 1970s. I was in America. We couldn't get shit over here. Are you kidding me? So I sort of took that approach to my show, and I was very happy that I started to, after a while, do the shows I really wanted to do, and I think it was received really quite well. It's just that I think I had to battle that sort of Eurosnob mentality for a while there, and I just decided that it was best to part ways. You know, I basically had a personality conflict, so I just thought, you know what, I'm tired of people who've never played the game, and people who've never played the game and are Eurosnobs telling me something about the American soccer experience. So that was that. So how's that for a little?
Okay, wow. So
I'm getting stuck in.
It was
get stuck in.
It was kind of a decision on your end more than anything.
Right. Yeah, it was okay. I'm talking to some people now, so it's sort of I knew that what I was doing was not appreciated, because how many people get Jim Gaffigan to talk about soccer? It just doesn't happen on shows. So it's like, you know, these are my friends, these guys. So I know, you know, head coaches of college soccer teams, and this is where American soccer is going. We need to develop college soccer. We need to develop MLS. We need to work on youth development, and then we win a World Cup. So all the other stuff is great. You know, you guys talk about the Prem a bunch. I love that. The Prem is fantastic. These guys, you know, our kids get to watch this on television now. It's an absolutely fantastic thing. But at the end of the day, we will live and die by MLS and by the U.S. men's national team. So, you know, I put out a challenge basically out on the air. I said, we're going to win the World Cup before the English do. So we can take, they can give us as much shit or talk down to us as much as possible, but we're going to win the World Cup before they do. I believe that totally.
Okay, well, yeah, two things about that. That I believe the same thing, and mm-hmm. the irony of, well, the reason why I like the Premier League, and I've had this debate with English people before online, right. That the Premier League became the most popular and the most enjoyable league in the world to watch as soon as all the players from France and Spain started to infiltrate the league.
So yeah, nobody's English. It's certainly
right,
not
so
the top scorers.
So it's
scorers,
when the continental
right.
flair came to the league, all of a sudden, hey, nobody just plays kick and rush anymore or plays
right.
plays the long ball anymore, and they actually have, you know, a little bit of skill introduced into the league. And, hey, all of a sudden, you know, teams like Man United start winning. Although, if another thing, if you want to piss an Englishman off when they talk about back when Liverpool ruled Europe, the team
right.
is Scots and Irishmen. And
right. Right, and if you've ever played against any of them, boy, they're just the best to hang out with afterwards. And also, you know what? It's kick anything that moves. If it doesn't move, kick it till it does move. It was, holy shit. I remember playing against those guys. It was like, it's like the fear factor. You're like, holy shit, the Scotsman coming after me. I gotta move.
Yeah, well,
the ball and run.
Yeah, and I was you. Now, granted, I didn't play the level you did, and I only played a couple years of rec ball because the school I went to didn't have soccer. And you know, long story.
American story.
But the little soccer I did play, it was with a bunch of Latins from Honduras, Mexico, El Salvador.
Right.
So I learned pretty quickly that, yes, yeah, soccer is actually a fairly contact sport.
Well, you know, the Latinos, I wish I had embraced that earlier. I embraced it later when I got into the indoor league, just about, you know, the skill. Like, look, I was a point guard in high school as well, and there it was all about finesse and dribbling and sort of having, you know, the ability to move the ball everywhere. So I love watching Steve Nash, because Steve Nash plays basketball like a soccer player. The way he moves left to right, you know, the way he'll shoot if you don't pick him up, if you don't close down. So, you know, for some reason in basketball, we relish this skill. But in America, classically, in the past, we have not embraced that sort of Latino flair, that South American flair that we have in this country. So it's sort of, I was a center midfielder who would get stuck in. I'd fight for every ball that went, but I developed sort of nicer skill later on. And I think this is one of the things that you realize, Americans, America has a ton of athletes who can just throw at things. You know, you've got that tall blonde kid who can run bigger, faster than everybody else. But what we need to develop is that skill, that ability to have skill and read the game. You know, because conversely, I've also played against a bunch of Brazilian guys who all they're worried about is trying to meg me. And then, you know, they'll meg you and you get goal side, you win the ball, you knock it wide, you get on the end of another cross, and boom. You know, they're down 3-0, but they don't care because they megged you 3 times. So you're like, great, okay, you can meg me, you just lost.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think America will be, you know, is great in that respect, and we have to embrace it. And I tell you what, the English do not have the answer. They do not have the answer. So love their game, love the Premier League, but we have to really start to hold our heads up high in this country and start to sort of give value to who we are. We're America, man. Come on, we're going to do it. We'll piss everybody off if we win the World Cup.
All right. Now, I guess kind of related to that is for us to develop this American style in our game, like you just mentioned, there is a need for more American voices on the air. It seems like in, you know, mainstream media, if you don't have an accent, you know, you're not getting a radio show, you're not getting a TV spot. So how do we cultivate, you know, Americanness in the game of soccer today?
Well, I think it's, you know, to stop having an inferiority complex. So if you have somebody who's does not know the game and says, okay, well, if the guy's got an English accent, we're safe because we're given some legitimacy there. Well, really? I'm not sure because, look, I talked to Rebecca Lowe. You know, I had interviewed her, and she's wonderful. She does a fantastic job with the Premier League. She really does. It's a really a professional job, and she knows everything inside and out. And, I mean, I could watch her all day. So she really runs a great ship. I did, though, ask her. I asked her, I said, you know, do you know who Ricky Davis is? She said, no. I said, do you know who Bobby Orr is? She said, no. I said, Pistol Pete Maravich, no. Will Chamberlain, no. So I was just making a point, you know, basically saying we have our experience here in this country and who we are, and we have a unique perspective there. So when I would talk on my show and I'd make comments about, you know, he moved the ball like kind of like a, you know, Messi kind of reminds me of those early Bob Cousy videos you'd see where Cousy was like moving faster than everybody else around him. Well, they were like, well, don't use that reference because it's not a soccer reference. I'm like, it's an American reference. It's Bob Cousy. We're sports people here. So if we want to just continue to groom Euro snobs in this country, we can do that. But if we want to start to include everybody in the American experience, and this game, the game of soccer, I think, is uniquely American because we're a land of immigrants, and it brings everybody in. You know, e pluribus unum is what it says, you know, in the United States. We're strong together. So all these immigrants come together with all these different styles and all this everything, and we come to this country and we become one. And so I think soccer is uniquely American. So the only way to have that reflected, you know, is through views of the public, is to have people who have experienced the American soccer experience, which is very different than any other country. So I think we have to stop having an inferiority complex as players, as fans, as television executives, as everything else, and as announcers. I've stunned you with my lecture.
Yes, you did. That was. We're taking our notes here.
Sorry. There'll be a test. I hope you guys brought your number two pencil.
Yeah. When I was just thinking, trying to think as you're talking about it, I mean, I know both Chad and I are kind of admitted you're snobs, but at the same time, I think we're the type that, and kind of like what you're alluding to, it's not so much that we prefer Europe strictly because it's Europe or strictly because it's the only way to do things, but mm-hmm. more along the lines of kind of like take the best parts of everywhere, like you're saying, and then meld that into something new, and then use our athleticism, use our better nutrition, use our American, you know, that stick to it until we get it right attitude, and then create something new. But just in the sense that, you know, like I said, I personally admit to being a Euro snob, but like I said, it's not that I'm a Euro snob in the sense that I look down on everything that's not, or I don't look down on everything that's not European, but just right. that I want to take the best of that part and then move it, or, you know, and then meld it with what we have here.
Right. Which is what I'm saying as well. And I tell you what, your names are Chad and Corey. You must be very young. You're younger. The only way for you guys to have watched soccer was to watch European soccer for the most part. You know, there's more soccer out there now for us to watch, but, you know, young people coming up, might not know who Ricky Davis is or Jeff Durgan, you know, Bobby Smith, and they should, because there's a long history in this country about, you know, with soccer, and boy, we had to really earn everything we got. But I'm always encouraged that the demographic is so young. You know, a lot of my listeners were, you know, the hipsters from Brooklyn, and it's soccer's all in, you know, inclusive. You know, there's different languages being spoken out there. You know, they had Kaká. Kaká was interviewed today down in Orlando, and he spoke in three different languages. You know, I mean, how many American football players do that? They're lucky if they can speak one. You know, so I think it's different for, you know, for the American public to sort of start to get a grip on the world that's out there. And, you know, so I think the Euro snob thing is fine. I had to learn it, you know, from Europeans. They taught me how to play soccer. And, you know, I had a Portuguese coach who actually told me to smoke pot and just dance around the ball. That was my coach. Thank you, coach. Appreciate it. But he was just like, look, the creativity, you got to create around the ball. I'm like, okay, my God. You know, so, you know, there was nowhere to learn the game. So we had to go to Europe. So, you know, I understand that. But what I'm saying is,
But that kind of out of the box coaching, that's kind of because the 2 years that I played rec soccer in New Orleans, my coach was Ecuadorian, and he didn't really like. I was always shocked about, like, you know, because I came from an American football environment where, you know, everything's structured and there's these really precise, you know, 3-4 minute drill periods where you know exactly what you do and you know what's expected of you, and you know if not, then they're going to yell it in your ear until you get it. So the two years that I played rec soccer for this Ecuadorian guy, he would basically play like, oh, get out there. Okay, well, you know, because I was a left back. So he's like, okay, left back, 4-4-2. You know, you played basketball before. You know positioning. But other than that, his instructions were basically, don't worry about it. It'll come to you. And it was kind of like one of those, like, well, what do you mean? It's like, you're the coach. You have to instruct me. He's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. You know enough about playing defense that when situations happen, it'll come to you. So, like I said, it was kind of just this almost like, I don't know if he was trying to, you know, be funny or just be like a Zen type of thing at the time, but it was like, no, I need more instructions. But sure enough, it was one of those, like, you know, soccer is a game to where it is one of the sports where you do kind of learn more by playing it with little instruction. Yeah. Than like having this really like over, you know, this micromanaged coaching style, which we tend to have in the States sometimes.
Right. Well, with baseball, basketball, football are classic three, certainly.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's part of the allure of soccer for me because I played everything growing up. And the one thing that I loved was playing soccer reminded me of pickup basketball, where it's a flow of play. And that's probably what your coach is talking to you about, which is like, just get in the groove, man. You know, and that's, you know, Americans are incredibly creative. We're incredibly inventive, and we have not always been that way on the soccer field. And that's like Tab Ramos in the under-20s. Tab's trying to create that, and that's what's so important about watching those under-20 kids play is, you know, we need them to be creative at that age. We need them not so much to succeed with wins and losses, but to play creatively. Because, you know, I was talking to Mike Waitola of Soccer America about it, you know, thinking how many guys on the under 20 team make the full U.S. men's national team. And I don't think it's that many because, you know, we do tend to lean on just these great athletes. And then all of a sudden, the decisions that you have to make at a higher level, the amount of skill that you have to have at a higher level, just doesn't translate. You know, sometimes the best athletes are not the best soccer players because they haven't been thinking correctly. They haven't been, you know, getting really incredible skills. So if you ever watch Tab play, I mean, he had skills above and beyond anybody else on the pitch. You know, he was playing with, you know, Brazil in the Rose Bowl there, and he looked like a Brazilian, man, on that ball. So this is the type of player we need to develop, not just the Jesse Owen type. You know?
And that's a great point you make. Corey and I were talking before the show about how, you know, the U.S. 20s who just, you know, made it to the World Cup this summer in New Zealand, right, which is outstanding. We're all excited. But, you know, they got off to a slow start in their group stage, I think drawing their first game, losing the second one.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people in the social media, which were, you know, a lot of the soccer people tend to congregate, were, you know, were flipping out.
That's all we have.
Yeah, and it was just it was bad to see, but people just need to realize that, you know, the under 20 level, as you said, doesn't really translate to the senior team level, and you'll be lucky if one of the or two of these kids end up, you know, representing the U.S. in a, you know, in the big time World Cup down the road.
Right. Well, this is, you know, this is part of the thing of this entitlement culture where, you know, you're given the, you're traveling around the world and you're getting some of the best coaching, but sometimes it takes a hunger away from you. You begin to think like, all right, well, I've made it. Well, you haven't made it. You really haven't. The fight just begins at that age. So, you know, they talk about a lot of these young players that go into the NBA. You know, my buddy's a GM of one of the NBA teams. He goes, you got a year or two with these kids to turn them into a real NBA player. But they show up in the NBA and they think, I'm here. I'm in. I've made it. It's like, well, you haven't made it. And I think that happens with a lot of the under 20s. They just sort of get cocky and think, all right, I'm on the national scene. But they're not. They're not. So, you know, this is the age we got to get them going. Here.
Well, and the other thing with that, well, and the other thing with that is that I've long been somebody who has been a, you know, the club I support is Arsenal. So, you know, even going back to the 90s, I as hard as it was to do that, I still tried to follow, like, you know, the U18s, the U19s, and just, you know, being a college football fan, you can see it in things like recruiting too. Just the simple statistical attrition is going to wipe out half of your team right off the bat, you know, come 3, 4 years, 5 years down the road anyway. So I think sometimes, you know, people have this misconception that just because you're on a national team in a sport like soccer, that you're automatically going to go on to a good professional career enough to the point where you're, well, it's only a matter of time that you're going to get into the, you know, the A international team too, where, right, like I said, when you look at just natural statistical attrition, you'll be lucky if, you know, three or four of those guys go on to, you know, to get more than a handful of caps. And
Or MLS careers. I bet you only a handful of those guys, maybe three or four of those guys get MLS careers. I mean, yeah, worthy ones, like, you know, more than 3 or 4 years.
Well, yeah, because so, even acknowledged soccer nations like Holland and Brazil, I mean, all of those guys are going to go on to some sort of professional career, but they're, we're talking long-time soccer nations. Those guys are still lucky if, you know, maybe half a dozen out of 18 guys go on to be, you know, full-time internationals longer.
Right.
You know what I mean? More than like.
And we don't have all those divisions in the state. So, I mean, you got one shot. You know, your best shot is that if it doesn't work, you can get a job selling insurance.
Right. I mean, you got a guy named what was that cat's name? Christopher Claris or whatever his name was, who scored he scored 4 goals in a U20 World Cup against Turkey 1 year, and I think he either finished second in the Golden Boot that year in like the 1999 World Cup or something.
Don't tell me he's a hooker now.
No, no. Well, he played in Turkey for like a year and went somewhere else and then like disappeared off the map. And I remember it was like, well, this guy scored 4 goals in a U-20 World Cup match. He's obviously going to be like, you know, one of our first world-class strikers. And then, like I said, he went to Turkey for a year. And then after that, it's like, well, nobody ever really knows exactly what happened to him.
Right. Well, you know what? You mentioned you're an Arsenal fan. So you watch Santi Cazorla, the way he dribbles. Yes. I mean, we need that. We need that, you know. And what I tell kids today, you know, if someone knows I was a professional player, I'm at a party, people are like, my son's on the State B traveling team. You know, what's your recommendation? I'm like, my recommendation is to get him out of the van instead of driving 3 hours to New Jersey to play in 2 games over the course of a weekend. Have him in the backyard with his brother going one-on-one for 4 hours. Have his mother throw a sandwich out there every once in a while. Have him take on his sister, the neighbors. Have him dribble around everybody. Get his touches in. Get his skill. You know, we watch U.S. You know, you watch, you know, I live in New York City. You watch, you know, kids play basketball. Everybody can play pickup basketball. They pick up the ball and they're not waiting for a coach or anything. They're learning how to, you know, do all kinds of tricks and dribble and juggle. And so when you get a coach and you get to be, you know, in a system of play, a coach has got something to work for. I mean, one of the most frustrating things I had when I left the professional ranks is I was helping out in junior high school and high school, and I'm still teaching the kids how to juggle the ball. You know, I'm like, God damn it, learn how to juggle on your own. I don't want to teach you how to juggle the ball. I want to teach you how to check back, third man running. You know, all these things that we should be teaching at high school, you got to know how to juggle. You got to know how to trap, you know, so and do that stuff on your own. Not on the State B traveling team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chad. Yeah.
Those are excellent points, and I guess that kind of leads us into a question. I mean, what you're saying now are the very same things that you hear Jurgen Klinsmann saying that we need to do in this country. So what are your views on how he's trying to reshape us?
Right. Well, he's opinionated. And I tell you what, no matter if you're in stand-up comedy or in business or in anything, you got to have an opinion. Because if somebody doesn't have an opinion, what's their worth, really? So I've disagreed with him in a bit, you know, of times. But, boy, you know, the guy's done it at different levels. I am still, you know, I hate to even, like, feel like I'm going back on a point. I've never been on this show, but the whole Landon Donovan thing just threw me for a loop. I just can't believe. You know, I lose, like, even my situation. It was a personal situation. A personal situation was made instead of a business situation with me, you know, at Sirius. But I would also say Jurgen made a personal decision as opposed to a business one as far as the soccer team. I was with my co-host, Grail Hallett, when the Cup was going on, and we were arguing about whether, you know, he was saying Donovan was going to start in the World Cup. I was saying, no, he'll probably come on in the 65th minute, be sort of a super sub. Could really change the game. Not in a million years imagining that the guy wouldn't be picked. So I think that one, that's a big faux pas that the guy made. And I think the fact that his son spoke out, you know, with that tweet, also, you know, something was going on at that kitchen table. Anyway, I think we need a guy like Klinsmann to come out and you know, give his opinion there and try to change this huge super tanker of a country. Good luck. Because there's so many little fiefdoms and so many little camps and things where people are sort of making their living with soccer, and it's not always the best for the whole body. But you know, I know Tab had, you know, got to play the way he wanted to play, and you know, he's got to win. He's got to win while they're playing well, and you know, the type of player Tab was, you know, that he's trying to get these guys to play in a certain way. But they also have to qualify, right? So. Therein lies the rub. Whether, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann as the technical director can sort of change that, I'm not so sure. We're really big. We're not we're not in Europe, a small country in Europe. We're a big ass country, and that there's a lot of good behind that. But some of the things are bad, which is it's tough to change. You know, a lot of these. Like I said, a lot of these little fiefdoms. One thing I don't understand with Jurgen Klinsmann has been the criticism of MLS. Now, we see, like, each year more and more players are coming here, you know, better, younger at times. So it's happening. It's slowly happening. MLS is a much better league than it was when it first started. Obviously, you guys know that. And the players are coming here, and you know, I think with a move like Josie, you know, what was Josie like? I used to say in the show to play in, you know, to play for the Red Bulls or play for LA Galaxy. Is the level really as bad as, let's say, Sunderland? And I would argue that no, Sunderland is, you know, some of the lower tiered Premier League teams. I think MLS, you know, is there. If you're not going to play at Sunderland like Josie was receiving the ball at the top of, you know, his defensive end. He was like picking up the ball at the top of the box, trying to get forward. He was just, it wasn't doing him any good to be there. So I think it's a good move for him to come back to the States, and I think it's an option for certain players, and it's more and more viable on the world stage to be playing in the United States. I really do. I don't think it's what it was, where it was like, you know, you're not ready. It's a good league, and we'd like to make it great. And I tell you what, if, you know, we're going to live and breathe by the MLS, we really are. So we have to embrace this. We have to start to ask more of the MLS. We have to ask more of our players. We have to ask more of our men's national team. And I rest my case.
Yes, there we go. And Corey was drinking. I thought he had a question.
Jesus, I'm drinking too, boys, so sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's good. So I guess maybe just to get your point of view and your opinion, you know, this, as you said, we're such a large country.
Yeah.
Yes, what's one thing that we can do to kind of, you know, help turn the tide in terms of, you know, player development? I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's lots of opinions people have out there. We've had many people on our show giving theirs, so we'll ask you for your wisdom.
Wait.
Well, I think it's happening. I think, look, I'm older than you guys, so I have seen the huge changes that have taken place here, you know, tectonic plates moving. There was nowhere to even watch soccer when I was growing up. There was just nowhere, you know. It was just trying to, like, learn how to speak Zulu. You had to just go out on your bike and figure out who the hell would speak this language. And I think the thing that's changed now is little kids wake up in the morning on Saturday and Sunday morning. They can watch Premier League. They can watch their high school team and see the difference between those two levels and say, look, I want to be like Santi. I want to, you know, did you see that move he did? Or Pogba, you know, he did that cut, you know, he like cut the ball back 2-3 times through his legs and, you know, three defenders. There was nowhere to witness that type of stuff when I was growing up with soccer. So now we have that. So a lot of people were saying, you know, Premier League doing so well here in this country, is it good for soccer? Is it going to hurt because it's going to compare it to the MLS? I think it is all good. The more soccer, the better here. And so I think what I can say to all your, you know, young listeners is to just, you know, get the ball, work the ball as much as possible, you know, basically try to play like those guys you watch on television, the people that there was no television for us to watch when we were growing up. So at least it's there now. And you know what? 350 million people, we're going to start to produce some pretty, you know, good players with some pretty thick skills. So it'll change. It is changing. And I tell you what, this is why, I was doing, you know, in the entertainment world, I produce a comedy festival called the Nantucket Comedy Festival. And also teaches kids how to do stand-up comedy through a program called Stand Up and Learn. And I had walked away from soccer because I felt like it wasn't quite there. There was nowhere to watch it. And MLS, I thought it's come up quite a bit, but it wasn't on my radar. And so, you know, I'm guilty of it as well. And suddenly I felt about 2 years ago, I thought, oh my God, man, this has hit critical mass here in this country. I think all the sports that used to basically shit on soccer are now borrowing things from soccer. They're saying baseball's too long. They're saying that American football, you know, who would let their kid play American football now? I loved American football, still do, but they're hurting each other. Those guys are going to live 30 years younger than they should be. I've met Earl Campbell and Tony Dorsett. I've hung with them. They're gone. These guys are toast. So I think a lot of things are in soccer's favor now, and the fact that there's a big world out there that most Americans didn't even know about. You know, we're world champions and things only we played. So, you know, there's a big difference happening right now, and I've seen the difference over a 25-year period. And so you guys with the 10-year period, there you've seen changes, but it's not enough. And I think that's the way it's supposed to work. We're never happy with what the changes are yet. We want more and more, and that's the way it works.
No, those are great points.
Yeah, and just to follow up on a point you just said about you know, world champions and stuff, we only play. I kind of ticked off a lot of the guys that I used to play high school football with the comment
right.
during the World Cup that I posted on Facebook, which was something to the effect of, you know, you can hate on soccer all you want. It's the World Cup is the only tournament in the world that everybody on the planet is trying to win. So it's one thing to win a world championship in basketball or even the World Cup in baseball that they've started recently, you know, where
never win, by the way, right? We don't win that.
Right, but just meaning that's an actual international tournament that you have really good teams at, and yeah, all of a sudden, wait a minute, we start playing other really good teams, and wait a second, we're not as good as we thought.
Right.
So just meaning that. You know, I got friends that adhere to that. Well, all our best athletes play football mantra. When I'm like, no, there's plenty of athletes here. We could easily be world champions in basically everything we do.
Right.
But like I said, I riled up a lot of my buddies that I used to play football with that comment. That's like, you can hate soccer all you want. It's the only sport where the world championship everybody on the planet is trying to win.
Yeah, well, it's, you know what, I come back to my hometown and no one gives me the athlete argument because I could have played anything and did. And my buddies who were football players, every one of their sons and daughters are all playing soccer now. And so they're all like, hey, Flinny, what's the deal? Hey, they all want to know about this game. So, you know, it is the future. It is the present. It's happening pretty fast from my point of view. You know, and I think it's all good. You know what? Yeah, you build a better mousetrap, and it eventually will happen. I got inducted. I was thankful to be inducted into the Hall of Fame in my high school here, and I'm from a football town. And when I stopped playing American football and started playing soccer when I was, like, you know, 12, people thought I was, like, I guess was suddenly a communist. And
I've had that experience.
Right, well, you know, and here I am, the football coach was up there, and he was all defensive about the football team. And it's sort of like, people would go out of their way to shit on soccer, and those days are just over. It's so pathetic. It was, you know, what's a real athlete can't play soccer. It's like, give me a break. It's not a contact sport. Give me a break. None of that stuff holds true. And here this guy was up there trying to defend concussions and the facts that kids were taking steroids and, all the bad stuff. And still, I'm not going to say anything bad about American football. I love it. It's a great game. But soccer is the one way to compete in the world in a game. And sometimes people get off on that, you know, the beautiful game thing, which it is. It's unbelievable. But it is a hard-ass game, and it's tough to play. And I had more of my buddies in college and in high school, football guys, telling me they were just amazed at the U.S. men's national team and what they did in the Amazon, the conditions they were playing in and how fit they were. And so it's going to happen. It's happening. And so I am glad I'm a part of it. Glad you guys are a part of it as well.
Well, because I'll also add, I think part of the thing about the beautiful game that sometimes people don't understand necessarily what that means, because that always, a lot of times that it always gets tied to the flair thing. But I always take the kind of, the kind of philosophical stance that part of the reason why it's the beautiful game is because it's the most simple game to play, but
right.
At the same time, there's also so many different styles of play that you can play. It can be physical. It can be,
right.
You know, like you said, you can have a slow methodical style. You can have a fast paced style. You can have a kick and rush style. There's all these numerous ways to play it. And to me, that's what makes it beautiful is that, it's like I said, it's the most simple game to play, but at the same time, it's the sport that has the most diverse styles of play as well.
Right. And I think, you know, look, I used to say to my roommate, my college roommate was a football player. He was a lineman. And I used to say, you know, I said, I went to the whole game. You never touched the ball once. You were on third long down passing situations. Right. You were like a doorman in a helmet. That's what you were. But I will say this though, you know, you watch the FA Cup, man, and it's unbelievable because look, I've played in every condition. It's just the way it is growing up as a soccer person in any part of the world. You grow up in these really shitty fields, these really, you know, fans throwing bags of urine at you or batteries and, you know, guys coming in 2 feet over the ball. It's just, and watching the FA Cup, it's interesting to watch, you know, Manchester United go up against Cambridge United, and it's like, you can see the field, it's a little, it's pocked up, it's beat up a little bit. You know, there's guys that are just playing out of their heads because they're playing Manchester United. And I'm like, that's the game I know. That's unbelievable. Because, you know, we have this beautiful backdrop of, you know, Manchester United takes the field and they're, you know, they're playing Man City and it's just everything is kind of sweet. And well, you know what? It's a down and dirty game sometimes and you got to be able to play. People were talking about, oh, well, the field conditions weren't good. I'm like, those guys have grown up in every field condition known to man. Give me a break. You know, so it's wonderful to watch that. Sometimes it makes you, it reminds you of the game we love and why, you know. So, and you know, having said that, though, even the under-20s, like they were talking about the field was poor. It's like, so what? So what? Those guys should have done better than they did. They really should have.
Well, and poor fields is one of the things that actually helps technique sometimes. That's, people don't realize that when you learn to dribble on a slanted field, it actually helps you dribble on a flat field, you know?
I remember playing the University of New Hampshire, and they used to have a fence that ran up against their sideline. It was like, you know, you'd tackle somebody and be like, you know, you'd put him in the fence. It was like playing in a prison. It was terrible.
Yeah.
So, but you just you learn how to do it. So, but you know, having said that, our under-20s are playing these kids against, you know, from Panama, and it's like, I don't want our kids to be entitled. They got to go out there and win. They have the biggest country with the most money, the biggest numbers. They're flying down there first class. They're staying in great places. Do your job, win the game. And you feel like these Panamanian kids are, you know, they don't have the same, you know, chances that the United States kids have. So they got to do it. Because having said that, you know, even with the women, I always get in trouble when I talk about the women because I think our women should win the World Cup every time. And I think they get a little soft. They get a little entitled because, you know, they basically motivated the rest of the world, women across the world. They changed the scope of history because they motivated women to go out and play this game. But before that, women in Brazil, women in Italy, they weren't playing soccer. They didn't get to play soccer. Our women had it pretty good. So they've caught up to our women and they've kind of passed them. So, and it's not good news that Hope Solo gets arrested, or she didn't get arrested, but she got in trouble. You know, she's kick ass, man. She's a good keeper. Those are the type of, you know, players that are above and beyond. She's kind of crazy. So, you know, that's what makes a good keeper, have that kind of crazy attitude. So she kept them in a bunch of games. And so if they don't have her, that's going to be a big, big problem.
Yeah, there's, I guess, reports today that she may be omitted from the World Cup this summer. They still haven't decided. So, yeah, that would be a...
That's a trouble. If she's not in, they don't win. I guarantee you. Because, I mean, they don't get tested in their own region enough. And it seems like, just like those young Panamanian kids, everybody else seems to be hungrier than we are on a youth level and on the women's level. I mean, our national team guys were hungry, but they hunkered down a little bit. But it's, you know, look, I used to room with the keepers. I don't know why they would always put me with goalkeepers because they're always crazy. But, you know, she's got that missing gene that makes her a little nutty that makes her a good keeper. So they need her.
That's probably why you ended up in stand-up, is hanging around with the nutty keepers.
Oh, God, yeah, well, I tell you what, stand-ups are even nuttier than soccer players, but soccer players are funnier than stand-ups. How's that? So, funniest guys I knew were soccer players, so one of my greatest memories, those long road trips. And everybody was so passionate about the game. I always say it's like when someone tells you you can't do something, you suddenly are going to hold on to that thing for dear life, and that's basically what soccer was during the 80s and the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess just kind of summarize your point, and it just makes me feel more hopeful. I mean, Corey and I mean, we'll be critical of U.S. soccer and MLS.
Right.
But at the same time, we're hopeful. And to hear you speak about someone who, no offense, has been around the game a lot longer than we have, to see, just be able to see how the landscape has changed.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I realize this now, too, speaking with you. And, you know, there's not a lot of people around for – us to speak to have these conversations. So to hear you
right.
talk about how much it's grown, it does just make me think that the sky's the limit. And we've always been advocates of this being a cultural thing. And it sounds like to you that you're seeing it, that this, you know, the sport is slowly permeating the culture. And that's what's really
right.
going to get us, you know, to get to where we need to be.
Soccer, we've built a better mousetrap. It's a great game. And I haven't had to defend it in a long time. People now are just curious about it. And that is a huge, that is a world of change than it was. And so, you know, I always sort of liken it to women in the workplace. Women used to ask, you know, for daycare. And, you know, wrongly, they were not given daycare in the workplace. And then finally, they became so valuable in the workplace that it cost less money to put them to have daycare in the building than it would be to, you know, let them go. They changed the workplace just from you know, through a positive. And I say the same thing with soccer. Soccer was just, you cannot ignore it. You cannot deny it anymore. It's just, it's here. People are watching it. All our kids are playing it. We're encouraging them to play it. We're just trying to produce a better brand of soccer. That's what we're trying to produce. And that's happening as well. My point, you know, that I go back to sometimes is the skill level is there more now. The hunger is not there. And what we need to really generate is the skill, good coaching, which we hope Klinsmann can sort of start from the top and have a trickle down. And then the passion that a dad passes on to his son or daughter. And you go to those Portland games or, the Galaxy games. I mean, there are some great fans out there. And, you know, people are going to go with their sons and daughters. And then you're going to go with, their son becomes a father. And then that's really where it starts to happen, where this passion happens. So I see it big time. And, you know, you guys just probably just don't see it as much. Because you're young whippersnappers and you never had a mullet.
Thank goodness.
I know. Oh, my God. I wish I could kick a mullet right now. I just can't.
Well, I was going to say, I'll sum it up in a ridiculously simplistic, but hopefully a point that actually makes a little sense. We're eventually going to win the battle because soccer has the coolest jerseys and everybody wants to look good. Everybody, you know, every girl crazy about a sharp dressed man kind of thing. Soccer has the coolest jerseys. So,
well, you bring up a good point, which is all marketing, you know.
No, exactly. Well, exactly. I like to make these weird obtuse points, but, because I tend to think, you know, a little out the box. You know, I'm left-handed New Orleans metal guy, you know, soccer guy who grew up in a football community. You know, like I said, I tend to think out of the box. You know, I was that jerk at catechism that was asking all the uncomfortable questions to the catechism teacher guy. You know, so I have a long history of
Why do I have to cut my hair? Jesus had long hair.
Well, exactly. So I have a long history of liking awkward moments kind of thing.
Right.
But like I said, I like to make obtuse points, and hopefully, you know, people are smart enough to get there. But, yes, so soccer's eventually going to win because we have the cooler jerseys. So
we have the cooler jerseys. We have the cooler hair. You can see their faces. I used to say when the football team would yell at me that I was a soccer faggot or a soccer pussy and all these nice homophobic sort of terms they would throw at me, I'm like, really, guys? Because we're dating more women than any of you are. It's not even close.
We're the only sport that embraces jerseys that are colors besides blue and red, or baseball, where everybody has some form of gray or black or gray or white uniforms, you know.
Hey, well, you know what? I also say soccer is a game in the streets. I was talking to Desmond Armstrong. Desmond is a former U.S. men's national team player. He's one of my roommates out in Colorado Springs many years ago, but. Desmond, this outreach to the African American community. We've got to get the Latino community more involved with our development. We have to get the African American community more involved with it. Because if you think about it, soccer is a game of the streets. All you need is that ball, and you just need a little bit of passion, a little bit of coaching. Desmond talks about how he just, you know, moved into a neighborhood and the guy across the street played soccer, and he suddenly got to learn the beautiful game and the beautiful language. So, not only are we getting better, but we have so much more to go out and sort of trailblaze out there because there's so many people who are just starting to see this game for the first time on Saturday morning. You know, seeing a kid turn it on and watching Santi your Arsenal boy, you know, just do like magic. If he had a second life, it'd be a screw. It was unreal watching him
My own nickname for him is El Brujo, which means magician in Spanish, because he was just it's basically like a witch, so like a warlock, and he was like a freak magician with that ball against Man City.
Yeah. He's built like Spud Webb. It's just wonderful. Yeah. It'd be nice. So.
All right, Kevin. Well, this has been a great conversation. Before I forget here, let's tell the people out there who, you know, or maybe followed you on Sirius XM or just first time, can they track you down on, you know, the interwebs and any other place?
Hey, well, I do want to tell you, I was on that, I was at Sirius for 9 months and we won that soccer award. So I want to thank all the people who voted and all the tweets. I'm at Over the Ball on Twitter. You can also go to Facebook at Over the Ball. Launched a podcast, and I'm negotiating with a few people right now is where I'm going to wind up, but going to have a podcast for sure. Overtheball.com. You can go there and it'll be on iTunes soon. So, guys, I so appreciate the time and love the work that you guys are doing, spreading the word of the great game here in this beautiful country.
And yes, thank you. And thank you for your time. And I think I can speak for Corey to say that you're welcome here anytime.
All right, boys. Absolutely. All the best. Get stuck in. Go over the ball.
Get stuck in.
See ya.
Yep. All right. Yep. Bye. And all right. And so there we are. That was Kevin Flynn, folks. How great of a interview was that, Corey?
Yeah, no, I was going to make a point before he left, but I'll just make it now that he's gone. But he made a comment, and you know, John, you know, our buddy John Townsend has alluded to as much before that, you know, about the correlation with pickup basketball, and when soccer becomes, when this game is really going to take off, and when our skill level is really going to, you know, get to a level where we can start challenging for things in tournaments, it's going to be when soccer is so much a part of the culture that it becomes part of the, you know, the pickup game culture, where, you know, you'll start seeing kids everywhere, you know, play all these pickup games. So, you know, because that's definitely where the skill is going to come from, where you have enough of a structured environment in a practice to where, you know, you're taught the proper technique, but you have those open environments like pickup games and playground games where, you know, the creativity and the flair is going to start coming in.
Mm-hmm. And so, Drinner talked there. He didn't say really anything that we haven't said on these airwaves before, or some of our guests have said before. So it's just a matter of getting this message out to the greater public, and you know, things are going to be good. But it's going to take time and a lot of hard work.
You know, and I think you know, the people who follow us on Twitter, you know, the last couple months or so, there's definitely an undercurrent of the average fan, not that they weren't knowledgeable before, but, you know, there's been a few mistakes that MLS has made in the past month, and I think people are really starting to awaken to the idea that, you know, there's a better way to grow this game, there's a better way to, you know, develop players than what we've done in the past, and not saying that all the ways are bad, but just that, you know, maybe we should start incorporating other things. And like I said, I think people are starting to awaken to that idea of, you know, we're on the right path, but we're not on the path that we're going to end on, if that makes sense.
And to end this in a DAF note.
Yeah,
as you
do
said,
it.
Thinking of new things and, you know, thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
I think, why don't we, if the Adebayor Juju Witch Doctors could put a curse on Adebayor to, you know, not score goals, how come they can't put them to put some kind of spell that makes us score goals? We need some American juju.
Oh yeah, well that can be done. You just need to find the right ingredients. All that voodoo juju magic. It's all about, you know, it's like a good gumbo. It's all about the ingredients.
Yeah. One toenail, Jurgen Klinsmann. You know, some sock sweat.
Now somebody might not know the formula, but it's just a matter of finding the right ingredients.
Yeah. So. Well, folks, we hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kevin. We've never talked to him before, so that was just outstanding. And as I said, it gives me a lot of hope for someone, you know, who's been at the game, you know, long before, or not long before, but in between, you know, the NASL and the MLS, to see how far that we've come, you know, as a country and as a soccer culture.
Well, yeah, I did get a kick out of being called a young whippersnapper, but I can remember Kyle Rote Jr., so when Kevin remembers that, or when Kevin listens to this later, you know, I do go back to the days of Kyle Rote. So.
Yeah, we're not quite as young as he thinks.
Yeah.
But we're still youngish.
Well, yeah, the first 10 years I followed European soccer, it was out of magazines and newspapers, so.
Yeah, getting scores, you know, a week or two after the games were played.
Yes, Lakeside News, man, that was my mecca.
So, well, all right, folks, I think that's going to wrap us up for this week. A very special thanks to Kevin Flynn at Over the Ball, and so I think we were one of the first people to speak to him. So head on over to overtheball.com and listen and wait for his podcast. It's going to be pretty excellent, I do believe.
Yeah, I mean, you can't not like a guy who, you know, one of my favorite soccer phrases he uses, you know, get stuck in, because, yeah, I like the flair, but I also like getting stuck in, too, so.
All right. Joey Barton approves.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, folks. So, for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. Thank you very much for listening to the Two Daft Yanks podcast. We'll be back next week with more Daftness.
And, maybe we'll find out who Chelsea plays next in the FA Cup. Oh!
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.